In the modern world, great leaders resolve their conflicts with words.
My God, it's coming right for us!
Country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Thursday, October 6, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the WAG Global Sitrep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends. For your head pace, for your pace of your head. So as your head goes trundling along in life, this is the thing you use to keep pace. And as well, it's also good to keep up the timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening to this program, you are as well. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal currently by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Osprey Radio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And as well, you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. You can do whatever you like with it. You can hand it out to people you don't know, whatever, what have you. It's entirely up to you. Got some feedback today. Let's get straight into that right off the top. Dear Sean, the thing on Tuesday, October 4th, episode about the show Cops. Now, this is somebody wrote in, I think it was Doobie X, wrote in about an episode of Cops that he saw. So I got a little bit extra detail here. Somebody else heard that. It was an episode filmed in Cincinnati, my hometown of sorts. Or rather, a section of it, Norwood, concerning the, quote, busting into his apartment. The police were called in because of a domestic disturbance. The man got agitated and started shit. Got zapped. Then police in the apartment got called for by the police on the street for backup because of a drunk driver. They tried to stop the man in the car. He kept going and got 6 tasers in him and kept driving. By the time he was stopped, he was cooking like a baked potato. Cincinnati police are just now being issued tasers because of a few shootings a while back. And 300 or so pound man getting the shit beat out of him by 5 cops with nightsticks. Just wanted to add some info on that. Cheers, and that's from Alconium. Well, you know, that's, again, I'm now going off of another listener's input, but with this little bit extra data, it does seem a little bit more, realistic that the cops lit the guy up with tasers. And as well, you know, if a guy's fighting, you know, the thing that I think people are really pissed off at is that now, you know, before, cops had to fight, and which stood the cops getting a chance of getting hurt. But now all the cops got to do is light you up with the taser wagon, and that's it. Ba-boom! You get a ride on the taser wagon, and takes the fight right out of you. Voltage has a tendency to do that. So people are upset now. Well, that's kind of cowardly, or whatever. I don't really care. The point is that cops need to be able to do their job without going, you know, getting themselves in real serious danger. Because at the end of the day, the cops get to go home, you know, because they're the ones who signed up to do this job, to try to keep the shit pumps off the street. And the way I see it, if the taser helps them do their job without doing any permanent damage and all they do is cause a little bit of pain, well, you know, it beats getting a nightstick across the head. Don't believe me? Take a nightstick across the head and then take a taser ride and see which one you would rather prefer for the long-term damage. Dear Sean, strangely enough, Sean, this is from Gloom Bunny feeding me back here. Strangely enough, Sean, it was Monday when we were finally declared a disaster area, right when I aired the show. Maybe there is a plot, especially since the Canadian dollar is now more than the American one. Well, that's not accurate, but that's okay. In any case, thanks, man. Now we can get all the fucking paid for that we lost, all the food paid for that we lost. as well as our shit fixed once our house moved and some trees got blown into things, etc. I would send pictures, but I spent the entire hurricane on death row. I work there now because I'm a cold, heartless bitch, so I didn't get any pictures. You work on death row? Does that mean you work in a prison or you work in an SPCA? So I didn't get any pictures. But honestly, I think the presidents of the USA listened to your show because he lollygagged about it until Monday. Well, you know, have fun, man. Lou, the entity formerly known as Gloom Bunny. Well, you know, gotta say, I personally believe that President Bush probably does listen to this show. If he does, you know, I would advise that perhaps we should, you know, try to address this issue we got going on in Iraq and things like that. But again, you know, I would assume that the president probably has a little bit more intel than I do. I'm not saying intelligence. I'm just saying intel. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's something to go with there. Now, dear Sean, just watched the first episode of Season 2. This would be Patrolling Season 2. Good job. Thank you. I spent a lot of time role-playing with friends and agree that book RPGs are better than computer games for a very simple reason. The game system in books are merely a suggestion. We take the game mechanics you like, and you can roleplay any scenario. It's a game without shackles. Anyways, great show. Keep up the good work. And that's from Weeg. P.S. Sims got mad editing skills. He does have mad editing skills. In fact, Samarian has been working very, very hard. This is essentially his life. That's one of the really cool things about Sim. A lot of people don't realize this, but Sim lives to do this. Like, he gets up in the morning, goes to work. You know, and of course, when he's slacking at work, you know, he's working on Rant Radio stuff. And then he comes home and he works, no shit, on Rant Radio stuff until about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, repeat. And he does this about 6 days a week. And on the seventh day, he comes over with his camera and chases me around the house to make sure that he gets some more footage so that he can bequeath it all to you. Sumerian is, in fact, Rant Media. Without Sim, you know, being the driving force behind this, I probably would have let Rant die a long time ago. To be honest with you, I can't believe how much dedication the guy has to the cause. So believe you me, if anyone deserves mad props for patrolling, it is not me. It is Sumerian. So make sure you pass that on to him at info@rantradio.com. Dear Sean, with respect to the discussion on killing angels and demons, or at least capturing them. Well, of course. This notion is quite artistically satisfied in an older epic anime series known as Evangelion Neon Genesis. The entire premise of the series is that an angel strike on Earth sometime in 2000 or so, which melted the polar ice caps and killed off 90% of the world's living things caused by an angel, caused by a quote-unquote angel. Humans recovered some remaining DNA from the angel and bioengineered their own angels or Evangelions to do battle with these angels. Cool. In the end, we go through both pre- and post-apocalypse, as you described in earlier newsreel. This is by far my favorite anime series of all time. I totally recommend it if you have the 16 hours or so to watch them all the way through. Oh, yeah, and learn a lot about Christian mythology along the way. I'm not a Christian, otherwise I probably would have been offended by the series. Woot! I give the series a 4.5 out of 5. Boot knives. Peace out from Data Maggot. I've never seen a boot knife rating system before, but what the hell? I mean, it seems to work out well, and I've never actually watched Evangelius, but I will tell you, I am, as everyone knows, as I look over at my beautifully framed Ghost in the Shell poster sent in by a loving and adoring fan whose name I feel really bad that I can't remember, but, you know, when somebody sends you a $20 poster and you put a $60 frame on it, you know, that's what we call praise. And as well, I managed to get down to the States and pick up all the final episode 7 of the season 1 special edition Ghost in the Shell standalone complex, which I'm very, very happy about. And, you know, it's funny, anime, especially like the Ghost in the Shell series, I've never really been into a lot of anime, but for some reason the Ghost in the Shell stuff just really, you know, gives me wood, you know, or titanium, as the case may be. So, you know, we have a recommendation here for Evangelion Neon Genesis, which I haven't seen, but a fan apparently is, and he's a good fan. You know, he's not an evil fan. Evil fans who send me photographs of my house on a satellite map with gun camera footage. Evil fan! Evil! But he's a good guy, submits a lot of news. So, you know, I haven't seen the series, so I can't recommend it, but I will wholeheartedly recommend Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, because as probably the greatest WOG mentality movie of all, or series of all time, because I love it. I adore it. I'm a screaming, drooling otaku. Oh, my God. And I still have to pick up the graphic novel, which is one thing I don't have. I do need the graphic novel and anything else I can possibly get. As well, if anyone could send me a link, I'm looking for a really good model/toy, I hate to say it, of a tachycoma. And for those of you who go, what? You don't worry about it. But it's sometimes called a think tank. But I'm looking for a really, the biggest, baddest ass model of a tachycoma I can get my hands on. If I can get one that's scale, I'll get one. Into the news, in paranoia news. Now, this was sent in by Drake, and I have a follow-up story of this that's just, this is a bad combo. You know, we're getting near Alex Jones territory again, but here we go. President Bush says the possibility of an avian flu pandemic is among the reasons he wants Congress to give him the power to use the nation's military and law enforcement roles in the United States. Avian flu pandemic, eh? Oh, I see. Okay, so he wants the avian flu pandemic. You see, so this is that same avian flu pandemic that everyone's talking about, even though no one's really dying from it en masse like, say, they do from malaria and stuff like that. But that's okay. He says here, quote, I'm concerned about what an avian flu outbreak could mean for the United States and the world. Vague. He told reporters during a Rose Garden news conference on Tuesday. Such an event would raise difficult questions such as how a quarantine might be enforced. Ooh, danger. One option is the use of a military that's able to plan and move, he said. So that's why I put it on the table. There, I think it's an important debate for Congress to have. Well, I would say, thank God he's given it to Congress. People who catch the worst strain of avian flu can die of viral pneumonia and acute respiratory distress, according to MayoClinic.com. So, you know, the disease has killed tens of millions of birds in Asia. Okay, so we're using the army to save chickens. Last week, the U.S. Health Agency, a World Health Organization, sought to ease fears that the disease could kill as many as 150 million people worldwide. This is what they're saying. 150 million people worldwide could go down with this. We're not going to know how lethal the next pandemic is going to be until the pandemic begins. WHO influenza spokesman Dick Thompson said, according to the Associated Press. Now, it's like they're making this shit up. You know, it's like there is no pandemic. They're talking about being afraid of a flu virus that doesn't exist. The consequences of an outbreak in the United States need to be addressed before the catastrophe strikes. Yeah, but, you know, there's lots of other stuff we could be worried about here. The president says he sees things differently, as he did as the governor of Texas. I didn't want the president telling me how to be the commander-in-chief of the Texas Guard, he said. But Congress needs to take a look at circumstances that may need to vest the capacity of the president to move beyond that debate. Uh-huh. Sort of like a king or a god or something. And one such catastrophe or one such challenge could be an avian flu outbreak. Yes, it could. It could be an avian flu outbreak, without a doubt. It could also be zombies raising from the dead. It could be the rapture. It could be a meteor strike. It could be alien invasion. And each of those are just as likely as the avian flu pandemic that doesn't exist. Should avian flu mutate and gain the ability to spread easily from human to human, first of all, there's a lot of shoulds and woulds and kind of and ifs going on here. World leaders and scientists would need rapid access to accurate information to be able to stem its spread, he said. Well, of course, we need to know on a real-time basis the facts so that the world's scientific community could analyze the facts. This is like a totally non-event. Bush said that he has spoken with Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, about working towards a vaccine to an influenza pandemic that has not struck yet. So, you know, what would you start with? Water? But that means a prevention could remain a distant hope. It's a distant hope for a distant threat that hasn't been realized. I take this issue very seriously. What issue? There's no issue, dude. I'm predicting an outbreak. I'm not predicting an outbreak, he said. But just suggesting to you, we ought to be thinking about it. And we are. Okay. I'd be a little bit more concerned about, you know, reports of about 60 nuclear devices that are supposed to be inside the United States. But, you know, whatever. If you want to be more concerned about birds, that's fine. Now, this story on its own is kind of nuts. But, then we come across this story over here, which kind of freaks me out a little bit. Wouldn't you know it? In a surprise announcement, scientists in the United States say they have created the influenza virus that killed at least 50 million people in 1918, and they've infected mice with it. Now, why the fuck would you do that? They say they need to understand how flu viruses cause lethal pandemics, and that outweighs any safety risks. But the risks may not be negligible. by painstakingly piecing together viral fragments from hospital specimens and a victim buried in an Alaskan permafrost. Jesus. Jeff Tabenberger and colleagues of the U.S. Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Rockville, Maryland, have now sequenced all 8 coding regions of the 1918 flu virus's genome. They published the last 3 coding from a polymerase complex, allowing the virus to replicate on Wednesday. Okay. So the Bush is talking about giving the government all kinds of, like, corralling plague powers because he's worried about a flu pandemic. And all of a sudden, the army's cooking up, reviving this flu pandemic that did kill 50 million people. By replacing the genes for either the 1918 virus's surface protection, hemagglutinin, or for its polymerase complex with genes of a tamer-related flu, the team showed that both contributes to its deadliness, with the HA especially damaging for lungs. This work will help us make vaccines or antivirals against pandemic strains, says Tumpe. It's unclear how, as the next pandemic is likely to be a different kind of flu. I put it to you that the next pandemic will not be a different kind of flu. It will be this flu that will be released. But, says Tabenbacher, the 1918 sequences are already helping in another way. They prove that a bird flu can go pandemic without combining with a human flu. Okay, now, what? How the fuck is that possible? And suggest which mutations it needs. The most likely pandemic candidate, H5N1, bird flu, has already had some mutations. We should watch out for more, he warns. Now, does anybody else here have, like, massive klaxon Battlestar Galactica warnings going off here? The CDC handled the 1918 virus only at the second highest level of biological containment, in which lab workers wear breathing hoods but not completely enclosed spacesuits. Well, why would they? It only killed 50 million people! I mean, come on! 50 million people died in 1918. And you got to bear in mind, in 1918, people were a lot healthier back then. Why? Because we didn't have all these antivirus, like, their immune systems were better in 1918 than they are today. So if this pandemic breaks out, we're going to see some serious population control, aren't we? And you know what that's going to clean out? Just like AIDS was created and released to clean out all the ghettos and non-Christian lifestyles, we just got to find a way to make sure that, you know, those rich and elite who live in their nice little gated communities can keep back using, you know, of course, armed forces, you know, the massive plagued unwashed. This is extremely scary shit. Now, I'm not trying to freak anybody out with this, but generally, now would be a good time to start looking into firearms laws in your local area. You know, and how do you follow that story up? You know, really, how the hell do you follow that story up? When you see something like that, those two stories put together, and they talk about, the president's talking about the avian bird flu and using the armed forces to control the people. And then the new scientists are saying they've resurrected a flu that killed 50 million people. And they worked hard on it, too. They had to exhume the dead. They were piecing this shit together, you know? Does that mean that perhaps the United States has gone completely fucking insane? I would hope that any Secret Service operatives or anyone who'd be involved in any kind of an operation, you know, the 9/11 thing, let's assume for a moment that the 9/11 thing was a hoax. Let's say the whole thing was planned so that we could get into this oil war. Let's go with that. Let's say Alex Jones is right, all right? Now, that's 3,000 people dead. That's it. $3,000. Not big in the, you know, large total, you know, we bombed and we kill people like that numbers all the time. So I could see some CIA or spook operatives going, you know, okay, well, it's only $3,000 and plus, you know, we got to do this for the good of the nation, yada, yada. These people are being sacrificed for the greater good of all. But there's a far cry between 3,000 people and 50 million lives, okay? I don't think there's a leader in history who's killed more than 50 million. I don't think Stalin even pulled that shit off. You know, I mean, this... I don't really know how to chase that. You know, I really don't. It's like, wow. Time to move out of the cities. You know, you either believe that, you know, this is a possibility by looking at what we're seeing on the news and, you know, kind of putting two and two together, or you don't. But I would counsel to all the wogs out there that you make sure you've, you got some food and you got some clean water stored up and you're able to isolate yourself and your family in case something were to go wrong. I'm not saying, you know, move into the trailer and drive off into the sunset. I'm just saying, you know, be advised and be aware. Shit like this could come down the pipe, and now is a good time to make sure you got enough food stores. In Weird Planet News, this is from DJ Mollusk, sent me this first. I've had it sent to me by a bunch of other people. Mariners have long told of rare nighttime events in which the ocean glows intensely as far as the eye can see in all directions. Now, if you can imagine this, okay? Fictionally, such as the Milky Sea is encountered by the Nautilus in Jules Verne's classic 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which I happen to have a first printing of. Found it at a flea market for $2. Scientists don't have a good handle on what's going on. Well, you know, nothing new there. But satellite sensors now provide the first pictures of a Milky Sea and have given new hope to learning about the elusive events. Yeah, why would, you know, 240 kilometers of the ocean start glowing? The newly released images, which you can link to, show a vast region of the Indian Ocean about the size of fucking Connecticut glowing three nights in a row. The luminance was also spotted by a ship in the area. The circumstances under which the Milky Sea's form is almost entirely unknown, says Steve Miller, oh, big old jet airliner, a naval research laboratory scientist, not the rock star, who led the space-based discovery. Even the source for the light emissions are under debate. The leading idea is that scientists suspect bioluminescent bacteria behind the phenomenon. Now, I've seen this, okay? You know, in the bays around Vancouver Island stuff, you run your hand through the water, it makes like stars. It looks beautiful. If you ever watch swim, you can watch fish swim around in the water. And if you swim in it, you feel like you're swimming in an ocean of light. It's beautiful. It's probably the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Such creatures produce a continuous glow in contrast to the brief, bright flashes of light produced by dino flaglet bioluminescent organisms. There you go. There's a good Scrabble word. That seem to be more commonly lighting up ship wakes and breaking waves. Okay, so they know that's the same stuff I'm talking about. The problem with the bacteria hypothesis is that an extremely high concentration of bacteria must exist before they begin to produce light, Miller told Live Science. Well, what could possibly support the occurrence of such a large population? One idea is the bacteria are not free-living, but are instead a part of some local support substrate. It's Godzilla, and he's the size of Connecticut, and he's glowing. Maybe it's Cthulhu. Hey, that'd be cool. Such may have been the case in a newly reported event, as research vessel that encountered the Milky Sea reported the presence of such bacteria, which are found to be living in the ocean with an algae bloom. Ah, so it could be an algae bloom, explained Miller, who's also with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute. So our best working hypothesis, which is still a theory, and they're not too sure, it could be Cthulhu, is that we are witnessing bioluminescence produced by bacteria that are colonizing some kind of organic material present in the water. So, Cthulhu. He said, satellite detection will hopefully allow us to target Milky Seas with properly equipped research vessels that will be able to answer all these questions definitively. Well, you know, you could probably just deploy somebody to go out there and take a look. I mean, after all, it is the size of fucking Connecticut. Now, that said, though, you can see this from space. Okay, the amount of light that this thing is giving off can be seen from space. So if it's the size of Connecticut, you got to admit, that would be pretty goddamn cool to be floating in a boat in a sea of light. Like, there's something you'd want to see before you die, eh? Now, in Wild Wild Florida news, a reference Wild Wild West news, sent to me by Chance and, again, everybody else, Florida, now I'm going to go off on this one here. Florida has a new law. This is now a law in Florida. Good place to live, Florida. That gives legal protection to someone who shoots somebody else as long as the shooter feels threatened or is attacked. Holy cow. Florida's Stand Your Ground law, which took effect Sunday, says citizens are no longer obligated to retreat from an attack if they're somewhere they have a legal right to be, such as a public street. Shooters also get immunity for prosecution as long as the person shot is not a police officer. So don't go geeking cops and everybody else is fair game. One gun control activist said there is no other state in the nation and no other civilized nation on earth that has a law like this. Another first for the United States of America. And one visitor to Miami said it's a little scary learning about the new Florida gun law. I don't think it's scary at all. I don't think this is scary at all. A gun control group is handing out leaflets in Miami International Airport, making sure tourists are aware of the new law that gives greater legal protections to people who shoot or use other deadly force. Dear tourists, please don't attack the Floridians, or they'll kill you. The Brady campaign to prevent gun violence tells visitors, do not argue unnecessarily with local people. That's hilarious. Do not argue unnecessarily. Yeah, because they'll fucking shoot you. If someone appears to be angry with you, maintain it to the best of your ability, a positive attitude, and do not shout or make threatening gestures. That's ridiculous. Brady campaign spokesman Peter Hamm says Florida's new Stand Your Ground law could cause the most aggressive people in society to overreact. That's a lot of wooden cuds there. Governor Jeb Bush has denounced the Brady campaign as a pure, unadulterated politics. For once, I agree with the guy. But the tourism industry is taking the campaign seriously. Visit Florida said Florida is very safe, and the Brady campaign is one group's political agenda. Supporting the law pushed by the National Rifle Association says it will make Florida safer. I concur. I totally concur. You know why? Because people, human beings, are genetically wired not to kill other human beings. If you look at the paper, if you look at the fact sheets, you'll find that people, you have to work really, really hard to get people to kill other people. It's very, very difficult to make humans kill each other. This law is fucking brilliant. It is one of the, I would embrace this law all over the United States and Canada. Watch crime fall through the floor. If I feel threatened with my family, some guy comes up and he's like, yeah, man, give me a wallet, blah, 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 blah. Bam! Instant gratification right there. I'm going to blow a hole in you big enough to throw a fucking cat through. Get away from me and my family. There's nothing wrong with this law at all. And people who think that, oh, well, the gun nuts are going to go crazy. No. The gun nuts are not going to go crazy now. If anything, there'll be a few shootings and everybody's going to get real, real calm. An armed society is a polite society, and people who don't believe that need to give their fucking head a shake. Now, in biometric news sent in by Wyandi, a San Francisco startup, now this is totally an ad for the startup company, but anyway, that said, Pay-by-Touch Solutions is expected to announce today $130 million in fresh financing towards a novel way of paying for groceries and other goods and services, a machine that reads your fingerprint. Not so novel, we've been talking about this for a while now. The capital raised $55 million of it in convertible notes and $75 million in loans. Holy crap. I should start a startup company and then just run with the cash. We'll help the company build out its finger-reading payment systems at several nationwide retailers, including in California, in the first quarter of next year. The company has already rolled out its so-called biometric payment system in a couple of hundred stores, mostly on the East Coast. Here's how it works. Customers sign up once by registering a checking account or a credit card and showing government identification such as driver's license. The pay-by-touch technology records the lines and ridges of the fingerprint and translates the data to a numerical algorithm that is secured in a secure database. The customers thereafter never have to carry a wallet or a purse back to the store, and they can use their finger to pay for goods across pay-by-touch network, which is now includes stores in 10 states. Now, the problem with this is, here's how you rip this off. You wait inside the store, wait for somebody to use Pay by Touch, you follow them out, and see what car they get into. Hopefully, it'll be an expensive car like a Jaguar or Beamer. Then, the next time they show up, you lift the prints from their car door handle, which can be easily done. You then create a thin film membrane using rubber cement, there's a number of different ways of doing it, and apply their fingerprints to your own finger, which unless the teller is paying really close attention, and I mean really close attention because we're in special effects territory here. We're talking like they're scratching your fingers and stuff. All right? All you got to do is you walk in, load up on junk, slap your fake finger down, scan your finger, you smile like an ape, and out you go with all the stuff. This is not secure. Most recently, Pay by Touch announced the system had been implemented across 85 stores in the Piggledy Wiggledy. It's the same guys. The company has also signed off half-dozen contracts with other supermarket chains, including two of the top five in the country, John Morris, president and chief operating officer, said. The goal, said Morris, is to be the dominant player of the biometric transactions area. Now, what might be an idea is some way that you'd have to educate your tellers to show them that make sure you look at the guy's finger, or at least make the guy have to rub his finger over, like, I don't know, like Velcro hooks or something like that, so that, you know, you make sure that it's clean. Provide a cleaning pad. So that people make sure that, oh yeah, just wipe your finger through the cleaning pad. That's what opens up the finger transaction. Then you can actually, you know, get a good print. Because otherwise, well, It's very easy to fake fingerprints. This is something to watch, and I bet you we're going to be seeing more and more of that. Now, in Mud Hut news, this was sent in by Dead Code. Now, don't worry, I'm not just picking on the Muslims here. Which, incidentally, the more I learn about Islam, the more I'm really, really not into that religion at all. You know, I mean, I'm not into a lot of religion. I don't know anything about Judaism, so I can't really make a comment. Mind you, the Jews I met who ran that camera store in New York were very nice, and they had a lot of robots in the store. I can't remember what the name of the store is, but Sparky and Sim were all crazy to go there. But it's this crazy fucking camera store. Go there. It's the weirdest fucking store in the world, man. I go in there, okay, and it's a camera store that you can't touch anything. And the place is totally run by Jews. You know, I mean, everybody in there is Jewish. I didn't see one person in there who wasn't a Jew. I'm guessing they're Jews because they had the little things on their heads and the dreads and all that good stuff. And none of this is meant to be disrespectful. I just don't know shit about Jews, okay? Anyway, so I'm, like, walking around the store and stuff, and they got robots. I'm not making this up. They got robots who, you know, they drop it into these, like, little conveyor belts, and the goes up to the ceiling, and it fucks off over to whatever till you're going to, so you don't actually, you know, touch any product. And they got everything in it. Laser range finders, camera lenses, you name it, man. They got it all. Any kind of optics, and it's in the Jewish robot camera store. Can't remember what the fucking name of it is. But anyway, you know, I don't know any, that's been my exposure to Jews, really, has been, cameras and robots. So as far as I'm concerned, Jews are pretty progressive. Any religion that allows robots to be running around your store, I'm all for it. Now, my exposure to Islam has been largely, I have a tendency to get into fist fights with people at my local work. And then I got, news stories coming in about all these guys blowing themselves up. And further to that, if you look more and more into Islam and these crazy kind of Sharia law where they're not so big on the chicks, like, you know, kind of putting tarps over the pussy and all that kind of stuff. I don't really understand the beekeeper outfits or how they're sexy, but whatever, you know. Now, I understand that Islam has done some nice stuff. You know, I mean, they did do a lot of education. It's part of their culture to have a trade. Very logical stuff here. But there's some weird shit going on. Now, for example, in New Zealand, there's a Muslim minister of parliament named Ashraf Shudere. And on a totally personal note, I can't stand these names because I have no idea how to pronounce them. It'd be nice if they had names like Murray or Frank. But I'm sure, on the flip side, he doesn't know how to say my name, so there you are. But anyway, Mr. Ashraf will not condemn the traditional Quran punishment of stoning to death some homosexuals or people who have extramarital affairs. So you cheat on your wife, you get stoned to death. You're queer, you get stoned to death. But the Labour MP, who has struggled with his role as a sole parliamentary representative of the local Muslim community, wow, that's got to be hard on him, especially in New Zealand, you know what I'm saying, is not advocating the practice here. Mr. Shudere said, again, he found himself between a rock and a hard place, wah, 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 on the questions of Islam when he appeared on TV3's 60 Minutes program last night. It was examining warnings about extreme fundamentalism within New Zealand's Islamic community. Bear in mind, we got like 1.2 billion Muslims worldwide, with a reported 70 to 80% of them being fundamental extremists. Now, I don't know how good those stats are, but those are some of the stats I've been getting. But if you think about it, even if only like 10% are extreme militants, that's a lot of fucking people who, you know, are really into killing everybody else. Mr. Shudere was asked, "Are you saying the Quran is wrong to recommend that gays in certain circumstances be stoned to death?" Okay, now that's a totally leading question. They're putting this guy fully on the spot, okay, for his faith. What? But this is a prime example why you can't have people with religious convictions in government. He replied, no. Certainly what the Quran says is correct, so it's okay to stone people. But in those societies, not here in New Zealand, he added. So in a Muslim-run society, it's okay to stone people to death, but not in New Zealand. So your GPS grid has a big point whether or not you get stoned to death being queer. Now, to be fair, you know, not just ripping on the poor old Muslims there, you know. Also in Mud Hut news, during a heartfelt, compassionate broadcast this morning, Dr. James Dobson, one of my personally fucking favorite people on the planet, God, I hate this fucking guy, explained why he believes that Harriet Mears, President Bush's pick to replace Sandra Day O'Connor on the U.S. Supreme Court, deserves the support of Christians and other family advocates. Now that's, and family advocates, Christians and other family advocates, because Christians are all about the family. This is the same piece of shit who founded Focus on the Family. The Focus on the Family took all of his daily broadcast today to share what he believes to be the relatively unknown attorney from Texas, who served as a White House counsel under the current Bush administration, would be a good addition to the high court. Who gives a fuck, buddy? You're not involved here. Shut your mouth. He said he knows and has spoken to people who have known. So he knows people who know people who know people who have known Myers for years. So it's obviously really good. And that he has confidence in those people's opinions. Great. So they're not even your opinions. Those individuals, says Dobson, have confirmed reports that the 60-year-old nominee, so this broad 60, is an active and dedicated Christian who serves her non-denominational evangelical Dallas Church, Valley View Christian Church. She is a deeply committed Christian, says Dobson, and a tithe-paying member. What the fuck does that have to do with anything of her church, according to these guys? Now, this is supposed to be a Supreme Court justice, right? Church, state. LifeNews.com reported that this week Myers taught Sunday school and served on the church's mission board for years. And the pastor of her church, according to the report, is a staunch pro-lifer. Imagine that, a Christian being a pro-lifer. What are the odds? According to the New York Times article yesterday, Myers made a profession of faith in Jesus Christ in 1979 and was baptized soon thereafter at Valley View Christian Church. Well, you know, I got to say that maybe, you know, if they were going to start shoving bamboo under my fingernails, I'd probably accept Jesus too. Her longtime friend, Texas Supreme Court Justice Nathan L. Hitcht, who prayed with Myers when she accepted the Lord, told the Times he knows where she stands on abortion. Yes, she goes to a pro-life church, and I know Harriet is pro-life as well. Again, religion and the politics should be kept really separate here, especially in the case of a fucking judge, a Supreme Court justice at that. Dobson also took time during his broadcast to address recent allegations that Ms. Myers in the late 80s had voiced support for homosexual rights and financially supported the presidential campaign of Democrat Al Gore. Dobson noted that in a 1989 survey, Myers said that she supported equal rights, not special rights for homosexuals, a stand consistent with his own beliefs, says Dobson. And in the same survey, he also stated he did not support the repeal of Texas sodomy law, a statute that was later overturned by the Supreme Court in Lawrence versus Texas. So, you know, holy crap. So I guess that lets us know what the hell's going on with the Sandra Day O'Connor broad. That's going to be a lot of fun. And regarding the Gore campaign contribution, now, not that I'm real big with Al Gore either, or Tipper Gore, Dobson pointed out that in the 1998, Al Gore was pro-life. The stand the vice president would ultimately change, perhaps for political expediency, Dobson suggested. Yeah, it's pretty funny that Al Gore, husband of Tipper Gore, founder of the Tipper sticker with censors, music, and art. You know, why don't you focus on your own fucking family, pal, and let us kind of live our own lives in our own ways. God save us all from your followers. Now, in Terror War news, now this is something else here, from Pig Monkey. Now, this is a very interesting development, and I'm going to cover this because this is very, very important. People need to understand just what is happening here. Now, I'm going to draw a huge division here. People seem to think that if you're for the military, that means you agree with everything Bush says. This is completely fucking wrong. Go ask Pat Tillman. Oh, wait, he's dead. Why is he dead? He was a star NFL player who joined the Army because he felt the cause and wound up getting himself geeked. But he was very much against a lot of the policies that are out there, and you'll find there are a lot of soldiers that are as well. So again, you have to look at the source, not the sharp end. Do not look at the sword, look at the hand that wields it. I'm a big fan of swords, not too keen with the guy wielding the sword right now. That said, in Terror War News, sent to me by Pig Monkey, who notoriously sends me really good stuff, after a bruising three-year battle, let's try that again. After a bruising three-year battle between Delta Force generals and the four stars who command conventional troops around the world, President Bush has given control for managing the administration's global war on terrorism to U.S. Special Operations Command, SOCOM, but with a giant caveat. The new Unified Command Plan of 2004, signed by President Bush on March 1 and reported here for the first time, well, on this website, assigned SOCOM as the lead combatant commander for synchronizing operations against terrorist networks. So that means SOCOM has now got control. However, the directive leaves the regional commanders in charge for executing counterterrorism operations in their own theaters. Secretary of Defense, good old Donnie, Donald Rumsfeld, who believes the regional commanders were too traditional in their approach to operations, originally sought to make special operations fully responsible for command of counterterrorism with much greater centralization. But Rumsfeld could not get the political top cover of the White House or Congress for his scheme to strip the regional commanders of the full control of operations in their countries. Both the CIA and State Department raised questions about independent military operations being run without full coordination with the CIA station chiefs or embassy country teams. Even special operations proponents were split on the wisdom of having independent, particularly clandestine, commandos and intelligence gatherers operating under separate chains of command. This is full-on Splinter Cell stuff here. While special operators will now be more important in the execution of global war on terror, they will be far from omnipotent, as some have feared. It is my responsibility to make sure they all mesh and we don't have any seams between the five geographic combat commanders, General Brian Doug Brown, SOCOM commander, told the St. Petersburg's Time in Florida on September 24th. To help him do that, the November 1 SOCOM will formally activate its new Center for Special Operations as the nerve center to coordinate global operations on actionable intelligence, particularly against high-value targets. Previous directories of operations, plans and policies, and intelligence and information operations have already been consolidated in the new center under the Three Groats Intelligence Support Group, J2, Operations Support Group, J3, and Campaign Support Group, J5. The director of the center is Lieutenant General Del Daley, the commander of Joint Special Operations Command from 2001 to 2003. Daley was the overall clandestine special operations commander after 9/11, operating from Oman and then from Afghanistan as commander of Task Force SWORD, later called TF-11. Unlike General Bound, who is himself rumored to be less enthusiastic to be given responsibility for the war on terrorism, Daley is considered one of the administration's primo shadow warriors. At Rumsfeld's request, SOCOM has drafted a global offensive counterterrorism war plan that specifies procedures to be used by overt and clandestine special operations forces and support military forces intelligence agencies seeking out and attacking designated terrorist organizations. Now, it makes more sense to me to have the special operations community get involved with this and run in the show versus, you know, having the U.S. Army Rangers do it, because they're kind of there to wage a more direct war. This is a covert war against a covert enemy, so it seems only natural to have covert specialists involved here. The section of the Unified Command Plan 2004 dealing with SOCOM reads, in addition to functions specified in sections of the report, they also provide combat-ready operation forces to other combatant commands as, when and as directed. So that means they can, you know, you'll get Delta zipping here and there, everywhere, wherever they're needed. Training, including joint training exercises of assigned forces, and developing appropriate recommendations to the chairman regarding the strategy, doctrine, tactics, techniques, and procedures for the joint employment of special operations forces. And it goes on and on here talking about what exactly is going to be going on with the war on terror. Very interesting stuff. Now, again, you know, even though you may not agree with the current administration and how they're running the show, you know, there is apparently a lot of people, you know, strapping bombs to their chests and blowing themselves up. There's also a lot of other people who are trying to do damage to the United States. Apparently, there is a chance Alex Jones is wrong. There is a chance that I'm wrong. There is a chance that 9/11 was legit. You know, there's a chance. I don't know how much of a chance I'd give that, but I don't really, even if it wasn't legit, the rest of the world and the United States seems to be believing that it is legit. So now that the country is deciding to do what it's doing, do you just renounce the United States and walk away, or do you suck it up and go, well, I guess we're the bad guys. I guess we're the guys who got the force. I guess, depending on how you slam this, we can either be with our country or against our country. And that's kind of a bad way to be. You know, I mean, some people would say, Sean, what are you saying here? You're talking like the whole you're either with us or against us mentality. Well, that seems to be what's going on. You know, I'm not happy that we've gone this route, I'll tell you that. But that said, it seems that that's the route that's gone. That's the war that's developed. So you've got to ask yourself, what side do you wage in on? Or are you just going to sit on the fence? You know? kind of a crazy one. I know I'm going to get some crazy email about this. But, you know, where do you stand with this? Are you on the fence? I don't agree with the war, so I'm not going to get involved. Well, okay, that's fine. But what if they lose? You ever thought about that? What if they lose? What if all the paranoids are right? What if, you know, there is nukes in the United States and 7 cities get nuked or 10 cities get nuked or even 1 city gets nuked? Will you go, well, we deserve that. You know, it's all this policy we got. Is it any surprise that that city got nuked? Or will you go, you know, okay, hang on. Hold it. These motherfuckers just nuked us for whatever reason. So I guess we're going to have to go Warhammer 40K and go, right. I am totally, that's the thing that I'm really kind of worried about, is when the nukes do go off. The nuke, of course, is terrifying. The whole concept of having a nuke go off in North America is just fucking horrific. What a terrifying concept. But the thing that's really going to be scary, the thing that'll be totally sad, will be the result of what happens after that nuke goes off. Because after that nuke goes off, all the moderates will go, right, well, I guess, you know, for whatever reason, this is the way the war is developing, and I'm not going to allow our society to fall. Even though we may be responsible for this war, we're in the war, and now that nukes have gone off, well, it's America or North America versus the world. And if that's what it comes down to, you know, I guess that kind of brings you to a love it or leave it kind of mentality. Now, in cyber war news, this is interesting. Mock cyber terrorists will simulate attacks on computer networks of business and government organizations to discover vulnerable areas of the Yomiuri Shimbun, the Yomiuri Shimbun reported on Wednesday. This is in Japan. So Japan's really getting set up for cyber terrorism. Japan's really switched on. You know, I'm liking the way Japan does business on a military front. Participants in the exercises will include financial institutions, communications companies, and internet service providers, as well as central government and local governments. For the exercises, private and public sector participants will set up dummy net servers with the same content as the real ones. Smart. Following the simulated attacks, experts will check computer security by gauging the time and work necessary for the participants to normalize their networks. Cyber terrorists attack could damage business and government bodies by altering web pages, content, erasing data, and freezing operations. An increasing number of companies and government officers have been experiencing cyber attacks. One such case at Kaku.com, Japan's largest website specializing in product comparison information for consumer goods, had to be shut down temporarily after its code had been tampered with. So, hackers who alter websites have now been firmly entrenched as cyber terrorists. Interesting. Now, a little bit more personalized in booster news, eating fruits and vegetables is essential to living a long and healthy life. Yet research has shown that they can cause serious and dangerous interactions with medicines, which we translate that to drugs. According to the July issue of General Dentistry, the Academy of General Dentistry Clinical Peer-Reviewed Journal, foods can increase or decrease the activity and toxicity of orally administered drugs. Intravenous drugs are not altered. So if you inject it, not a big deal. But if you take pills and you eat certain foods, it can fuck with the drugs. One of the most studied of these interactions is the inhibition of CYP3A4 enzymes caused by grapefruit or its juice. CYP3A4 enzymes are responsible for the metabolism of more than 60% of orally administered drugs. Drugs that interact with grapefruit include anti-infectives, anti-inflammatories, and cardiovascular agents, central nervous system agents, estrogens, gastrointestinal agents, histamine, H1, antagonists, blah, 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 goes on, and erectile dysfunction drugs, including things like, well, Viagra. So it seems that if you're taking these meds, you may not want to drink grapefruit juice as well. As little as 6 ounces of grapefruit juice may lower the amount of the drug needed to produce the desired effect, which could cause an overdose if you happen to wash down your Viagra with grapefruit juice. Which, it seems to me, grapefruit juice is a very common drink. Personally, I don't drink grapefruit juice. But I wonder if you could use that in conjunction with something else, meaning that, you know, if your painkillers aren't really working or whatever, drink it, wash it back with 6 ounces of grapefruit juice, and you'll find that, holy shit, does it ever work. Very interesting stuff. Make sure you check that out. Now, in black ice news, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission has filed a lawsuit against alleged spyware maker Audacious Marketing and its owner, Walter Rhines. The company lured consumers into downloading its software by promising peer-to-peer file sharing application that would get them anonymous and free access to music downloads. The charges claim that the Promise software failed to deliver anonymous file sharing and was anything but free because it came bundled with spyware application called Client Man. Several spyware removal firms, including Symantec and a Computer Associates, label Client Man as spyware. The spyware part of the software would download and install additional applications, very Trojan-esque. The malware, among things, would redirect users to try to do a search on Google or Yahoo to a website pushing results for Ryan's websites. The software also served pop-up advertisements to gather information about the user's system. Very great. So you'll be seeing more and more of this, I think, in the future. More and more people actually, you know, selling stuff that they say is, you know, well, good, you know, positive, well, information, peer-to-peer sharing information. But in actuality, just like BearShare, it works out being what? Oh, it's spyware. More and more. This is more and more how they're trying to scare people to get away from peer-to-peer networks as well. And in arcology news, sans flying cars and cold fusion, we're really just starting to let ourselves get acquainted with the idea of living in the future with our 3G and OQOs and what have you. Then boom, the South Korean reality check comes in and bursts our bubble yet again. It seems they're whipping up a brand new metropolis called New Songo, a ubiquitous city being built 40 miles outside of Seoul, which is like the world's largest gadget. It will serve as one of the largest integrated technology test beds ever conceived. There's more and more of these things going up everywhere. Built as the next stage of development for technology-enabled living, New Songo will equipped with 297 million RFID research center, a $297 million RFID research center, wow, when completed in 2014, and its 65,000 residents will all have homes with electronic locks, integrated video conferencing, VOD, and unified systems and services down to details like each resident having a non-identity-linked smart card that transacts purchases, grants entry to mass transit, parking, and opens your front door at the end of the day. How very 1984. How super George Orwell. There are some seriously high hopes for the $25 billion project, of course. But we still got another 9 years until they've wrapped their spanking new city to see exactly how obsolete this now futuristic lifestyle setup will really seem. Very, very interesting stuff. And going with your multiple gadgets, today's daily hack is how to buy from Best Buy, the big box retailer, from below cost. Because, well, I feel no pity whatsoever if anybody happens to rip off Best Buy. And that's all I have for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 71 people. 56 continuing subscribers from last month, plus 3 new subscribers, and 12 one-time donations. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help keep this daily new broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Project Pitchfork called Alpha Omega. I'm going to leave you now with a track by Run DMC called It's Like That, and That's the Way It Is, which is a pretty good tune for our times. Please listen to the words. Until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
And it goes a little something like this.
so. This out.